Welcome to Are We There Yet? The podcast where Sonia and Jamie explore leadership, sustainability, communication, and where they intersect. We hope you enjoy this episode, and you can find our archives wherever your podcasts are. A Spartan race is an intense and challenging obstacle course designed to test participants' physical strength, endurance, and mental resilience. Inspired by the ancient Spartan warriors, these races typically involve running over long distances, combined with a series of demanding obstacles such as mud pits, wall climbs, rope traverses, spear throws, and more. Spartan races are known for their emphasis on teamwork, grit, and pushing participants beyond their comfort zones. Our guest today is Nick Miles, who has been participating in these races since 2018 throughout the Northwest of the United States. Welcome, Nick.
Hello, Jamie. Thank you.
So, Nick, hi. Can you tell us a little bit more about these Spartan races?
Well, yeah, Jamie described them pretty well. It's an endurance thing. You know, you're racing yourself. I'm part of a team, but it's a lot of individuals there at the same time. But when you are racing, you kind of develop a group that is at your pace and your speed. So a lot of people start working together to complete the obstacles. And it is very difficult, the harder ones you go, you know, when you're running 13 miles. And it's on the worst type of terrain that they could find. They don't make it easy. It's not a nice paved trail. It's usually a dry riverbed for a mile and then maybe even actually in the river for a quarter mile or so, and then up and down the steepest hills they can find, basically. To compare it to like a half marathon or a 21K, for time, it doesn't compare at all. Because, you know, on those, you're just running pretty much on flat ground, not a lot of elevation. These, with the 30 obstacles that they mix in between, if you can do it under 3 hours, you're finishing in probably the top 12, 13% of the 2,500 people that attend the race. We've tried to set a goal to finish in the top 10%. And they break it down into age groups. When you finish, you see your results within your age bracket and then within everybody that raced. So you can kind of see where you fall based off all those.
So another question. I understand there are three levels of Spartan race. Am I right about that?
Yeah. First one's a 5K, and those are more common. So they do those in a lot more. There's a lot more to attend in the Northwest, or just in the country, actually the world. You can do them all over the world. But the 5K is the most common one. Then you get to the 10K, and it's still fairly common. But the half the marathon, the 21K, which is referred to as the Beast, that one you do have to kind of travel. There's maybe only three or four in the Northwest in a given year. And they encourage you to do, if you want to do the 5 and the 10K, so we'll do the 5K on Saturday. And if you want, you can do the 10K on Sunday. And then when they do a Beast, they'll do a Super, which is the 10K. And you can do both in a weekend, but the team hasn't really discussed that. That's we're pretty beat up after the 21K.
And are the obstacles comparable then? So if you run, I don't know, 10K, are the obstacles easier than if you run a 21K, or this is the same level?
They add a few more the longer they are, but it's pretty much more running in between, distances in between. So it's 28 to 30 obstacles. Some of them will only do in the Beast, like some extreme ones, like there's like a 300-pound tire that you have to pick up and flip over twice. And you can do it. A lot of people are like, who can flip over a 300-pound tire? Well, you can do it as a team. So if you're there with a team, or you see somebody, I could run up and help somebody who's trying to do it on their own or something like that. So that's the idea. But yeah, it is usually the same obstacles for the most part.
So when you're running this race and you see someone struggling, mm-hmm. is your immediate impulse to help them? Is your immediate impulse to say, man, I got to get past this person? Or what are your sort of non-logical thought processes you're going through this?
It's definitely to help somebody, or if you see them and they did something and they struggle to do it, we usually, you know, I'll tell them good job as you pass them by or help them out. But you can tell when somebody's going to struggle on an obstacle. There's a lot of things that if you're tall, you have an advantage because there's, you know, an 8-foot wall that you just flat wall that you have to go up and over. So if you can't reach up and grab the top of that thing, there's just no way you're going to get over the top of it. So if I'm up on top of it and whoever's immediately right behind me there, I don't want to take up space on there for too long, but I'll throw a hand down and pull a couple people up that are struggling or not able to jump up and grab the wall and pull up all the way. And then there's other people that just put a knee down and let people, you know, step on their leg, kind of a step stool off of their knee, and help a few people up before they go up and over.
Would you say that helping other people helps you finish the race?
For sure. Yeah. The team that I'm on, they could tell that I would stay with the team and we would all run together and I would help everybody that I could. And so for one race, they said they didn't want me to help them, or they didn't want me to run with them. They wanted me to just see how fast I could actually do it. And so I did it in Utah, and it was nowhere near as enjoyable. Just running by myself, just to finish by myself. That's not the main reason I do it.
So, Nick, how did you get introduced to the Spartan race in the first place?
I'd never heard of them until 2018 when I moved to Boise. And my daughter made a friend in the playground at the apartment complex. And so I started talking to her dad, and our daughters would play. And so we'd start talking. And I had heard somebody mention a Spartan race. And I thought, I don't know what that is. And then this friend, he did a lot of mountain climbing when he was younger. He traveled all over and did some mountain climbing. So I said, have you ever heard of a Spartan race? I'm not sure what it entails, but I know there's one coming to Boise. And he hadn't heard of it either. And we kind of just left it at that. And then we didn't see each other for a few days. And we both went home and researched it. And then the next time we met, first thing he says is, yeah, if you want to do a Spartan race, I'll do it with you. That's how him and I started.
So what motivates you to do these races now?
It feels great to finish it, to say that you completed that. Usually you're going to get an injury of some sort. Usually it's like a torn finger, or there's a rope climb that you have to climb, and they put that at the end. They put the really hard ones right at the end. And I wouldn't do them if I was by myself. I know that. And it's the group workouts that we do. What brings us all together at my house. So we do all the training at my house. We kind of have the standing appointment on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. Whoever wants to come over, come over. The workouts are specifically designed for this race. You know, you got to be able to move your body weight around really well and balancing on really unstable ground and things. So,
are your workouts designed specifically for a specific race or just for Spartan races in general?
Yeah, just for the races in general. We take the perfect environment out of the equation because, you know, like on a treadmill, the ground's moving under your feet and it's spring loaded and it's soft and it's in an air conditioned room. And we pretty much make it as difficult as we can.
How far in advance of a race do you learn what the course will be?
They don't post the actual workout or the actual obstacles until like a week before or so. And you really don't know the terrain until you're standing there. When you show up there and you start getting in line to start, there's a huge map. And then they tell you the elevation, like, you know, the first mile, you're going to climb 1,000 feet. So you start to really understand it about a week beforehand.
So you have to be prepared for anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
Who designs those trainings for you?
Well, it's myself and Brett, the guy that I met. We kind of work together and do that. And he does enjoy like building the exercises. I think he kind of does it on the side on a piece of paper while he's at work. He's an accountant. So I think he's scribbling stuff down on what he wants to do on Tuesdays. And then he sends me a screenshot or text of what do I think? And I say, yeah, sure. Perfect. Every workout we've done since 2018 at my house is configured differently. It's never a repeat of the same workout you did prior.
So if I think of some of the obstacles that you faced during the race, like climbing a rock wall or something like that, how do you practice for that?
You really can't, other than just being able to control your body weight from your arms. Like a rock climber trains, you know, they'll hang on things and do pull-ups. And it's really about strengthening your shoulders and your back and everything. And a lot of the obstacles are just from your arms. There's a wall that's called Stairway to Sparta. It's about a 7-foot flat surface. And then right on top of that, there's these little rock holds like you see in a rock climbing gym, little grabs. And then those go up for, say, another 7 feet. And then from there, it turns into metal bars. So you got to grab these metal bars and go up another 7 or 8 feet. So you're pretty high off the ground at this point. And they got to transition over a triangular top and then come down the backside. It's really, you think, how do you train for that? Well, you just, you know, we do rope climbs and pull-ups and simplified workout stuff, but it's actually what makes us able to do it.
You almost have to prepare for any eventuality, and you might know sort of how muscles work or how they interact, but you're not necessarily going to be doing captains of crush or something only to get your grip strength up, but you might be working all the muscles in your body, and then you may end up not having to use some of them, but that's just part of the overall training physically and mentally.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely don't do like isolated muscle workouts. Mm-hmm. It's full body. Like if it's whatever we're doing, it's exhausting your muscles and your cardiovascular system at the same time.
How do you feel after a workout?
We all feel great. We finish and we do make it competitive. Sometimes we work a little competitive edge into the workouts at my house. Like, all right, let's break off into two teams. Everybody seems to like that.
So if you're, let's say it's the holidays or something and you're 5 days out, you haven't had a chance to work out. Are you itching to get back into the garage?
Yeah, we did take a break for the holiday season. Brett and I have done them quite a bit. He just lives next door to me, basically. And then when the other guys can make it, they make it. And when they don't, they don't. So we get serious, real serious, about 2 months before a race.
Tell us a little bit about the team you train with.
It's 6 guys, but it seems to be growing. One of the guys on the team has a friend who wants to do it. And so, of course, he's more than welcome if he wants to do it. So it's 6 of us, and it's actually pretty large age range. We've got guys from 47 on the team down to 30.
And different skills level, I am assuming.
Yeah, surprisingly. Skill levels, you'd think the younger guys would be bigger, faster, and stronger. But you know, once you start to get that old man strength, that's not the case.
So how do you design exercises that work for everyone?
That actually gets a little tricky. If we have something that we're going to do, and well, we know this guy really struggles at that, you know, we make it clear that like this is what they want to work on or improve on. So that's why we put it in there for them. They trust the workouts we build are what they need to do for the race. I mean, I've built a lot of stuff in the backyard. Like I built a sled that you push, you put weight on and you run behind. Built some pull-up bars on the back of the house, and we went out and found some big tires, some old tractor tires, and we brought those home. So those are in the backyard now too.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this is your life. So your house is outfitted for this. Your friend is writing these things down at work. This is in some ways your vocation, sounds like your career, even though maybe you don't make money from it.
Yeah, it's more of just a Tuesday, Thursday thing. You know, I do like the team and the traveling and when we all come together. And then we usually, after we work out, we'll just sit around for 30, 40 minutes. And I've got a fridge in the garage. Anybody can grab whatever they want to drink out of there. And then we socialize for 30, 40 minutes. And, you know, we've all got a big dopamine rush from finishing the workout. And that's why I do them, really.
What are some of the challenges that you, with a team, see as you're running the race? Because it's one thing physically demanding, but it's also mentally exhausting. How do you support each other and how do you prepare for that?
It is very physically and mentally. It definitely helps to just be running with somebody that you know. Sometimes a guy will fall behind a little bit. We're like, hey, where'd Brett go? I haven't seen him in 10 minutes. And then all of a sudden, boom, there he is. He just shows up and he's running with the group again. And to get over the mental difficulties of it, it's definitely running with somebody and even just having small conversations while you're doing it, because you're really exhausted. You don't have a lot of energy to speak too much. And getting over the obstacles, that's actually more difficult than the running. By the time you complete one, if you complete it, that's when you feel the most exhausted, is once you get up and over that thing, your heart rate's just through the roof and you can't necessarily just start running right away. You got to kind of give yourself 10 seconds or so before you take off again.
When I think of some of the obstacles that could come up in a race, for example, a wall and then a mud pit in front of it, how do you help each other to do that?
Well, that one, to go under that wall, you're pretty much on your own at that point because it's a muddy mess. But usually it's actually feels pretty good because if it's in Utah in July, they're not going to drench you in water until the end. So you kind of want that submersion to get that cold water on you to feel alive again, get going. But even like going under that wall, that's probably one of the easier obstacles to do. And that one's usually right close to the finish line.
I'm hearing a lot of parallels here. And so the way this is sort of coming together in my mind is that you are a group of people who may not necessarily have a lot in common other than this thing that you do together. Maybe if you had met them at a bar or on a train, you might not have really struck up a conversation. But here, you're almost intentionally going through this traumatic event together. It's physical, it's emotional, it's mental, it's draining. And you do it together. And that almost forms this bond that's unbreakable, whether or not you have anything else in common. Could you talk a little bit more about the relationships that you've built with your teammates?
That's actually very well said. I think that makes definitely is the case. You know, a lot of these guys I wouldn't necessarily know or be involved with if it wasn't for this and the bond that we've created with our traveling together. Get to where we're going, prepare for the race beforehand. It's a whole trip. I mean, it's a whole weekend to go run a race. It does create a lot of bonds. And all of us are, you know, with the age group difference, a lot of us are in different phases of life, right? Different chapters of life. Some of the younger guys are talking about getting married or buying a house. And then some of us older guys, we've got a lot of input on that. You know, we've got a lot to say about that. So that definitely brings us together.
So Nick, do you as a group have a person who leads this effort? Someone that says, okay, we'll train on Tuesday and Thursday and Sunday. We will do this. This is how we will do this exercise.
Yeah, it's usually, I mean, Brett and I usually work together on the group just to keep everybody updated on things and say, hey, race is coming up. Who's interested? Who's not? It's a combination of, he says, without me, he wouldn't be doing these races either. So,
do you find that your teammates sort of fall into different roles? So you've got the organizer or maybe the leader, maybe you have the cheerleader or the jokester or the engine, if you will. What kind of roles have people self-selected in your group?
Yeah, definitely have kind of the comedian, you know, the funny guy. And then, you know, I guess I would describe myself as, you know, the main driver of it. You know, I'm the guy that drives the rental car, everybody in a van all together and make sure we get to the airport in time, what time we got to leave and all those things. So the team does change. Like I said, over the 5 years, guys have come and gone. They're still around. They still might come to the workouts once in a while, but they might not be doing the races anymore just because necessarily they did one and it was maybe just too much for them. But they still like to work out at my house with us and like the camaraderie of us all together and hanging out. It really is open to anybody who wants to show up.
Do you think you will reach a point where you've done enough races?
Yeah, I don't know. It definitely keeps you motivated. Like when you sign up and you pay for the race, that's your drive to be like, well, I can't just, oh, I'll do it tomorrow, right? Eventually you're going to hit this wall where you're like, you have to be ready for the race because of injuries and rolled ankles. And there's a lot of people that do get injured on there. I thought about it a year or two ago, you know, once you complete the trifecta, all three races within one calendar year.
What's next?
Well, then they want you to try doing two races in a weekend.
I hear you say they a lot. Who is they?
Just the Spartan company that puts the event on.
You do a lot of work and organization to get ready for this, but there's also a whole scene of background people who do organization to make it a thing that you can do.
Yeah, there's a lot of employees and volunteers there. I think a lot of people, if you volunteer at the race, to be, you know, kind of a ticket taker or anything like that, then you get to race for free. That's something that they do. But there's a lot of employees there running the whole show.
What is the skill level of attendees of these races?
It's a completion race. So nobody's watching you. Nobody's judging you. So if you don't complete an obstacle, there's usually like it's about a quarter mile penalty loop that you have to run before you can get back on the main course, basically. But nobody's there watching you to make sure you did that. It's not like that. So you're really holding yourself accountable, and it's how hard you want to push yourself to finish. And I've seen people walking around extremely difficult obstacles and finishing at the same time I did. But we were, you know, because we were just doing this with each other the whole race. But they're like, well, I'm not going to do that one. And they walk around. So, but that's their choice. That's just how they chose to run the race.
And would you say these people are athletes that attend the race, or more weekend exercise type of people? What would you say? What is the mix?
Yeah, the more challenging the race gets, like a 5K, which is called sprint, you'll get a lot of people that are just there to finish the 5K. It's, you know, it's a little over 3 miles. It's a lot simpler one. And then you get to a super 10K, you notice that there you're seeing a lot more people that have obviously trained for this. And then when you get to the half marathon, all right, now these are a lot more serious people here that are committed to training and finishing this.
Do you see the same people at events year after year?
We do. Occasionally, you see, there are guys that are actually, and it's impressive, that are handicapped in some sort of way. Like there's a guy that's in a wheelchair that has this specialized wheelchair that he uses that's kind of made for off-road terrains. And he's actually trying to complete the course. And he does. He completes them. So just in the Northwest, we do see a lot of people that we recognize from another race or groups.
Is there anything else in your life that gives you the same kind of feeling as training for and or completing a Spartan race?
Nothing that pushes you as hard, even in the race and in the training. Nothing that pushes you to your limit, basically. That's the idea, is to just push yourself to your physical exhaustion point. And then your body adapts and gets stronger and stronger. When we get a new person that wants to come over and work out with us, they'll usually not be able to complete the workouts that we do. I wouldn't say they're extremely difficult. Like anybody can do them once your body's conditioned to do them. It is just pushing your heart rate and your body to its limit that I think we all enjoy doing.
What are some learnings that you acquired in the course of these years in preparation for the Spartan race with this team that you can also apply in other areas of your life?
I suppose knowing, you know, when you think you've reached your limit, you really haven't, not even close. I'll look down at my GPS watch and I'll see that I'm 9.5 miles in. And I'm like, oh my God, I got 13 miles to the finish line. You know, and I'm only, say, 10 miles in. It's like you're starting to think to yourself, I don't know if I can finish this. I may have to walk the rest of this one out. But when you're with a teammate, you kind of see that they're struggling. And so we kind of feed energy off each other and help each other get through the finish line.
That's a beautiful lesson. You know, it's almost like I don't have enough energy to feed myself, but you look over to a friend and they don't have enough energy to feed themselves, but suddenly you're feeding each other with energy you didn't even know that you had. So I see that sort of resonating throughout the rest of the world. Like, how can we tap into accessing wells of energy from each other that we didn't even know that we had? How does that apply elsewhere?
It's definitely there when you develop that bond. Or that, you know, that like that commitment, or like, this is, we came here to do this as a team.
It sounds like you can even develop it with strangers in the middle of the moment.
Yeah, you really can. Because a lot of people are, you know, when we pass, say I pass somebody on the trail, they'll usually yell, good job, you know, because we're running as a team together, and they'll yell, good job, guys, and vice versa. So everybody's kind of in that same mindset during the race. And if somebody's taking a knee and they, you know, they might have rolled their ankle or something, somebody's always asking me, you all right? And talk to them for a quick second, make sure they're okay and keep going.
It sounds like there is another learning in this whole process, and that is how to motivate people on a team to accomplish the goal, whatever the goal is. So it sounds like people on your team might need different type of motivation depending on their skill level. And you're adapting the way you're motivating them based on what they need. Am I hearing that right?
Oh, for sure. Definitely. You know, just because of, you know, one guy is a very skilled runner And there's some other guys that really struggle with the running part. So all of us are together, you know, within a group, but you're usually side by side with somebody every 10, 15 minutes that transition happens where somebody's up and over an obstacle and then I go up and over the obstacle and two other guys are behind me, but me and this other guy we've completed, so we'll start running together. And then the other guys are just right behind us. And so you're always moving from one teammate to the other during the race.
There is another thing that I'm hearing here, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm hearing you say, we, the team, I would not want to do it alone. Although you lead this team, you feel like you are equally a part of it, like anyone else. You don't position yourself as a leader. You're very hesitant to do that. I believe that's a strength of a leader. How do you see that aspect of you, of your personality, impacting the team spirit?
Yeah, I definitely don't want to be labeled like, you know, whatever he says is what we do type situation. That's not at all. That would be the exact opposite of what I want. I know that my opinion is valued and taken into consideration. So I'm just very cautious of what I say and how I act and what I do. So
how do you handle conflicts within the team?
It's usually the other teammates with each other. I don't really have conflicts, but you know, in when you're in kind of a situation like that, it's pretty short-lived. Nobody holds a grudge or does anything. There's not a lot of conflicts that come up, actually. It's pretty smooth group that we have. We all kind of mix together well.
What are some challenges that you're seeing in preparation for the race when you look at the team?
Usually the challenges are more guys leaving. One guy's just got engaged, so he's busy with other aspects of his life. It's completely understandable. So he's kind of not necessarily as involved as he was. He's trying to be, but just knowing that that's going to happen, and there's plenty of guys that want to join the team that like the idea of what we do.
How has this experience in the last 5 years changed who you were 6 years ago from who you are now?
Prior to that, I never really was like in a group of like this. I didn't necessarily go out and seek a large group like this and of guys and friends, and never really got together with six different guys at the same time. So that was all new to me as well. Without this event or this thing that brought us together, I know it would have never happened. But now that we've created these bonds and connections, I think, you know, even without this, a lot of us will still stay connected one way or another.
Were you the organizer of a friend group before?
No, not really. It's fun, you know, and as you become a parent and you meet other parents, and then you know, you can kind of end up talking to other parents. And that's kind of how we started to form groups together. And then, you know, that guy has a friend at work that he says he wants to bring over. And I'm like, yeah, bring him over. Sure. And eventually you start to build kind of a tight group. Some people come over once and they never come back again.
So 5 years from now, how different do you think you might be? What will change or stay the same?
I could see us still doing them. Maybe even traveling, you know, as time goes, we're talking about even traveling further distances. Like, you know, they even have them in Hawaii or South America or places like that. So we have talked about traveling for some bigger events in other countries even. So I could see that happening in 5 years or so.
So Nick, when you think of your experience in the past 5 years and what you have learned about yourself and about working with others, would you say that we as a society are ready, that we are there to create a world where we can motivate each other, where we can create sustainable teams, where people can do things the way they want to do them without pressure? Are we there yet?
I think so. I mean, it's just the way you approach it. You know, I think it's the difference between, say, a manager and a leader. And we've all seen the, you know, we've all seen the images online, you know, leaders sitting on the horse telling people what to do. And, you know, I mean, that's a manager, and then a leader's down there, you know, doing the work with them, helping them accomplish the goals. So maybe it's a different approach that people are just not aware of, or it only works in certain environments, certain conditions. But in a large group that does extremely difficult, challenging things that push everything about you to the limit, then it definitely is a way better approach. It works. Keeps us going. Keeps us moving on to the next race.
Do you see yourself and each of you on your team going into your civilian lives, if you will, being leaders in a way that you wouldn't have before this race?
Yeah. In fact, a lot of the guys on the team are leads in their profession. They are, and that's what they actually have, lead roles. A few of the guys are accountants and things, and they're the lead of the group of accountants. So it carries over into other aspects of your life.
Would you say that maybe they're already type A leadership types who found this and it worked with the way they already lived their life? Or did it sort of transform them into this new way of thinking and being?
Yeah, I think it actually probably did transform, small aspects of their lives and the way that they probably function or operate in their professional lives.
Okay, thank you, Nick. That was interesting to hear Nick talk about Spartan Race, and I really loved the way he leads the team without realizing that he leads the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I see so many transferable skills. You know, it's sort of an extreme thing for everyone in the world to start doing Spartan Races, but if we could bottle up some of that camaraderie and energy that can help people realize that we can all lead each other in some ways, and we can find this way of working together, this energy that we didn't know that we had through collaboration. I really love that.
I fully agree. In my mind, that is the true definition of sustainable leadership.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sonia, and I'll be seeing you next time.
Thank you, Jamie. See you next time. Thank you.